The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello everyone, and happy August. Hot, no doubt, for you. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return. No, we begin a brand new issue of the August 22 edition of Our State magazine. Celebrating North Carolina, the theme this month is a guided tour of the Intracoastal Waterway. I am going to love this issue. I had a boat on the Intracoastal Waterway for 12 years. Alas, no more, but it will bring me some happy memories, and I hope that it will either bring you happy memories or educate you well about it. But we are going to begin, as we always do, with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief of Our State magazine. How sweet it was! I missed the fig trees. Growing up in the 70s in Asheboro, it seemed like every house had a fig tree in the yard, like the sprawling one that towered over the shed where my grandfather kept the lawnmower. In August, when those brown turkey figs were at their syrupy sweetest, I picked as many as I could, dodging the wasps that loved them as much as I did. I rarely see fig trees growing next to houses now. If I can get to the farmer's market early enough, I can usually buy a carton or two before somebody beats me to it. But they're no more than 6 or 8 figs stuffed into one of those pulp fiber berry baskets. It's never enough. I miss the smell of Sweet Betsy, the trillium with its woody burgundy blossoms. It's scent like warm cinnamon candy that grew in the woods near my house. I don't find this in neighborhoods much anymore, either. But recently, I thought I caught a hint of its spice on a trail at Chimney Rock State Park. I stopped in my tracks and whipped my head around in search of the source, inhaling the air like a bloodhound, chasing a smell that you can't bottle, but you sure can remember. I miss the buttermints that you could scoop with a communal spoon from a bowl next to the cash register after you paid the check in a restaurant. I miss the sweet sound of music drifting from open car windows when you'd pull into a gas station. The radio stayed on even though the engine was turned off. Sometimes when I'm traveling around North Carolina, I land in places that surprise me by showing me things that I thought I'd lost, and they're not gone at all. Broadway, a small town near Sanford in Lee County, is only 2 miles long from end to end. There are 1,200 people who live there and 8 churches in the city limits. On my visit, I stopped at the North Carolina Veterans Memorial, a beautiful brick pavilion in Broadway Park. I'd expected the nicely landscaped grounds and the tidy gazebo, but I hadn't counted on the clusters of gardenia bushes that were blooming everywhere. Not quite my Sweet Betsy, but their cotton candy scent just fragrant, just as familiar. A half mile from the park, I found Broadway Hardware, a 113-year-old throwback to the kind of business you can meander around for an hour. In inventory, epoxy and enamels and stains and paints, water heaters and bolts and pipe fittings, a wood stove in the middle of an aisle, deer and rabbit repellent, rattlesnake sulfur, side meat and hoop cheese in a cooler on the counter, and a bin full of live crickets, $4.95 for half tube that you scoop up with a trowel hanging on the wall. Across the street, a place for hot dogs and milkshakes, and a 5-minute walk away, Woodard Family Barbecue and Grill. The name alone telling you not just about the food, but also about the atmosphere. I don't know about the Buttermans here, but they do have butter beans and barbecued chicken, and the desserts, the sweetest honey bun cake, an ambrosial apple cobbler, and all homemade. If I stay in town long enough, I may even come across a forgotten fig tree that someone planted long ago, still bearing its summer-sweetened fruit, awaiting a chance discovery. Well, now is normally the time when I push the button to start the music as I read the photo essay, but I forgot it was the first reading of the month, and sorry, no music this week. Wonderful photo essay, I guarantee it without looking at a single picture. Safe Passage. On the intercoastal waterway, commercial and recreational vehicles cruise a watery highway of natural and dredged channels with one face toward the land and the other toward the ocean. Written by Philip Girard. Beautiful, beautiful double spread here. Sun is setting, and there is a gorgeous sunset on the top of the page. Some purple clouds against a Carolina blue sky, and some golden yellow clouds, and getting a little darker, light on the edge and light spots in the middle, but most of them are really a golden color. And as we go to the horizon, it's almost all gold with just wisps of little bit of purple, not as bright as the purple up at the top, and then this blaze in the center of where the sun is setting. You can't actually see the sun, you just know it's there because it is so bright and it's gone white right in the center. And we are looking down the intercoastal waterway here. There are boats on the left. They are tied up. Their bows are all out. And along the right, there's a lot of privately owned docks. There are some have boats on them, some don't. And there's one lone boat making its way back home as the sun sets in the distance. And on the left-hand side and receding into the background, it gets really swampy. You can see patches of water, but most of it is green. And then it leads to woods. And the caption says, the intercoastal waterway traces the length of the North Carolina coast, providing a path between the mainland and barrier islands like Holden Beach, shown here, near the South Carolina state line. Overleaf now, I see a lifted drawbridge. The Diamond Shoals. Those were the problem for ships trading between Virginia and North Carolina. The dismal Swamp Canal, initially completed in 1805, then expanded and fully operational by 1829, provided an island route from Norfolk to Albemarle Sound without having to brave the treacherous ocean waters around Cape Hatteras. Not until the Congressional Rivers and Harbors Act of 1909, though, did a viable modern commercial route, what would eventually become the Intracoastal Waterway, began to take shape. With the creation of the ICW, as it's called, the Dismal Swamp Canal became one of two routes south, along with the more heavily traveled Virginia Cut, into our state's waters. In North Carolina, the ICW runs for 300 miles, now part of a 3,000-mile route, reaching from Boston to Key West and then around the Gulf of Mexico to Brownsville, Texas. The Dismal Swamp Canal passes South Mills, site of a Civil War battle between some 4,000 soldiers, and connects to the Pescatank River, which carries boaters to Elizabeth City, home of the Museum of the Albemarle, and walking tours focused on the Civil War and industry. In Waterfront Park, a stop along the Network to Freedom commemorates Elizabeth City's role in the Underground Railroad. The ICW is created for protection of commercial vessels from the stormy seas off Hatteras and later U-boats during World War II, and also for connection between Virginia and North Carolina, and eventually the whole eastern seaboard. The North Carolina section was built in stages, the first connecting Norfolk, Virginia, to Beaufort, east of the Dismal Swamp Canal. A second route took shape, connecting Currituck Sound to the Albemarle and Chesapeake Canal at Coinjock, to the North River, and thus to Albemarle Sound, where it meets up with the Dismal Swamp route. From there, the consolidated channel continues into the Alligator River and the Pungo River Alligator Canal, the longest of five land cuts, and then to Bellhaven, that's where I was, billed as the birthplace of the ICW because it was the last link in the Norfolk to Beaufort route opened in 1928. The Pungo River carries boaters south across the Pamlico River into the Goose Creek Game Land Passage, then into the Bay River, then Pamlico Sound and the Neuse River to Oriental, a sailboat haven. Adams Creek flows south to the back door of Beaufort. It's inlet guarded by Fort Macon, a stunning Civil War-era masonry fortress. The ICW proceeds southwest as a fairly straightforward channel, past Swansboro, Camp Lejeune, Sneed's Ferry, Topsail Island, and Wilmington, until it takes a hard right through Snow's Cut into the Cape Fear River and down to Southport. Unlike a river, which flows from its headwaters in an ever-maturing evolution from brash and bumptuous rapids to a wider, more stately flow, and finally to a broad ship channel, the ICW has as many tidal flows as the inlets it serves, as many currents as the rivers and creeks that gush into it from the hinterlands. It can be calm as sun-glazed glass, or roiled as wind-driven whitecaps and breaking seas. The ICW is both natural in its often breathtaking beauty and also engineered for use, a highway for watercraft that connects natural sounds, creeks, rivers, inlets, estuaries, and back marshes by a continuous dredged and buoyed channel. The ICW can range from a few dozen feet wide at the Dismal and Pungo Canals to 400 feet wide, the Cape Fear River Channel, or even thousands, the estuary heading into Southport. The ICW is a watery interstate route with off-ramps that can lead travelers to communities such as Bath, the oldest incorporated town in the state, once home to the pirate Blackbeard, islands such as Ocracoke, and a variety of havens and adjoining waters along the way, with many first-rate seafood restaurants and deep layers of history. ICW traffic is largely recreational now, but also includes barges, commercial fishing boats, U.S. Marine Corps Amtraks from Camp Lejeune, and in the ocean-bound channels of Cape Fear and Beaufort Morehead City, pilot boats, tugs, ferries, naval patrol boats, Coast Guard vessels, research vessels, and container ships that dwarf the Titanic. The ICW always has one face toward the land and one face toward the ocean. So let me review the pictures in this section. It got a little wordy this week, didn't it? The Diamond Shoals is where we started out. There's a picture here of a drawbridge raised and a powerboat coming through. The roadway is very low, so even for an ordinary powerboat with any sort of a superstructure on it at all, they require lifting the drawbridge. And on the right-hand side, wow, this is a really narrow and lengthy canal. It just disappears into the distance into a pinpoint, and there's trees on both sides, and we're looking across the bow of a sailboat, and it says, the Dismal Swamp Canal is one of two protected maritime routes from Virginia into North Carolina. Today, only two of the canal's original seven locks remain, including the one at South Mills, and I was just talking about it as a drawbridge, but I guess there's a lock there also. We don't see that. And there, in 1862, nearly 4,000 U.S. Army and Confederate forces battled for control of this vital passage. Over Leith, we have an aerial view, And it says, for boaters traveling the inland route across the intercoastal waterway, Elizabeth City is the prize at the end of the dismal swamp canal. So this is an aerial view. We see a highway on the right-hand side is a bridge which is divided into two sections, which of course means they probably had one this originally and then got too much traffic, and now it's got two or three lanes in each direction. And I guess it probably is a drawbridge because there's a little house on one side of the center channel there. And then there's a big water tower and a lot of buildings, the highest of which might be three stories, near the water. There's a small marina in front. And then what's interesting out here in the front of this is it looks like it might be privately owned, but it's really, I've never seen this. This is very interesting. Coming in from the highway, there's a heavily treed lot, and then there's a rather large house. And what's interesting is from the house there is a very, very long and windy dock that goes through first a forested area, then an open area, and then comes out to what look like three man-made circular, I'm going to call them discs because that's what it looks like. It almost looks like somebody laid three circular cement patios out there. Maybe it's something to do with the Coast Guard or whatever, and they can, I don't think, it doesn't look like it's meant to be a helicopter pad because there's something on each one of the pads that would interfere, I think, with a helicopter landing. So I'm not really sure what that is, but it certainly is interesting looking. And then on the right-hand side, there's a picture of the Pungo River Alligator River Canal. That's the one that runs from Beaufort up into the Albemarle, connecting the Pungo River with the Albemarle Canal. That's why it's called the Pungo River Alligator River Canal, because at the other end, it's the Alligator River leading into Albemarle. It is straight as an arrow, quite wide, heavily treed on both sides, and there's almost nothing in this very lengthy passage, in terms of places to stop or whatever. So I never explored more than about a mile in from the Beaufort, Belhaven end of things, because it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And then there's a map of the intercoastal waterway through North Carolina, starting up the Dismal Swamp Canal, which is quite a ways inland, coming down to Elizabeth City and the Pascatank River, into the Albemarle Sound, crossing it, coming down that Alligator River, River, the canal that I just spoke of. Then it comes down into the Pungo River itself. It turns. It goes out into the Pamlico River, which is on the inside of the Pamlico Sound, quite a ways from Hatteras. So you've got the Outer Banks way out there. In other words, this is not following the course of the Outer Banks at this course, but is quite a bit more inland, even though there's a lot of water around there. Then it cuts through a man-made section going down here into Oriental. And Oriental, there's another man-made section which takes you over to Beaufort and Moorhead City, and then it heads on down to Sneed's Ferry and Topsail Island and Wrightsville Beach and Snowcut and Southport, and then it heads west through the tip of the it's below Wilmington. It's called the Cape Fear River is down there. It cuts across the bottom there and at Sunset Beach and ends up in Calabash, which is right on the North Carolina-South Carolina border. Now, for relief, we have Beaufort. Cruising into the Beaufort Harbor, boaters cross historical paths with pirates such as Blackbeard, who reportedly anchored his flagship Queen Anne's Revenge off the old waterfront and tarried ashore at the 3 centuries-old Hammock House, so named because it stands on a small hammock or hill overlooking the inlet. The strip of ramshackle fish houses fronting the harbor underwent a transformation in the 1970s. Now the waterfront is a lively scene of shops and open-air restaurants. It's a little bit of an exaggeration. It's not all that lively down there in Beaufort. Anyway, I'm sorry, Beaufort. I was thinking of a Bath where it's not lively. It definitely is lively down in Beaufort. So it's a lively scene of shops and open-air restaurants, many of them resounding with live music during the summer months. So it was Blackbeard was up in Bath, but they ended up talking about Beaufort. That's what confused me. There's a picture here of the gigantic bridge. There's no need for a drawbridge on that. It's so tall. It crosses Gallant's Channel. And on the right side, Fort Macon, which is at the end of Emerald Isle, up near in the Atlantic Beach area, constructed of masonry from 1826 to 1834 to guard Beaufort, then called Old Topsail Inlet. The fort was garrisoned by Confederate troops at the start of the Civil War, then captured by U.S. Army forces after a severe bombardment. It became North Carolina's second state park in 1924, opening to the public in 1936, then was briefly reactivated as a military base during the U-boat threat of World War II. Now we're over to Morehead City. One of two commercial ports in the state, Morehead City was named for John Motley Morehead, a former governor. He established the Shepherd Point Land Company with 600 acres on a deep water channel, connected to the interior by the Atlantic and North Carolina Railroad, of which he was a strong promoter. Beginning in the 1880s, the railroad brought summer visitors to the swank Atlantic Hotel until it burned down in 1933. By then, the city was well established as a tourist destination, as well as a busy port and fishery. More than 90 buildings cluster in Morehead City's historic district, including five churches of both white and African American congregations. Quite a wide picture here on both pages of Morehead City. A popular stop on the intracoastal waterway, Morehead City beckons boaters to dock and enjoy a meal at one of the restaurants that overlook Harbor Channel. So we see quite a few boats here, docked one right after the other. They're all power boats on the left and a big parking lot behind it. Then there's some sort of a central commercial building, probably a restaurant. And then there's more parking. And this, I don't really know what this thing is on the right-hand side. It seems to be like a gigantic raised pier, but then embedded in it is a roof. So I guess this building's maybe at the ground level under a flat roof. And then more powerboats up to the right. How about Sneed's Ferry? During colonial times, Edmund Ennett operated a ferry across the New River on the Post Road between Suffolk, Virginia, and Charleston, South Carolina, over which a dispatch rider carried news of the Battle of Lexington in April of 1775. The town is named for Robert Sneed, a lawyer who made his home here in 1791 and who was infamous for killing a Revolutionary War hero named Colonel George W. Mitchell, a murder for which he was convicted, then pardoned by the governor. For generations, the community has thrived on commercial fishing. A high-rise bridge connects it to Camp Lejeune. The soul of Sneed's Ferry can be found in its seafood, the town's main industry. Spot the shrimping fleet moored in Wheeler's Creek near Captain Fry's wholesale seafood house. Then visit the Riverview Cafe for a classic seafood platter. So most of this double spread is a picture of the fishing boats, a nice close-up of the boat with all of its very tall arms that lean out to hold the nets away from the boat once they get out there and start trawling with them. On the left is a picture of the round neon sign which says Riverview Cafe and has a shrimp all lit up in the middle of it. And then, delicious shrimp on top of some kind of a fish with hush puppies and French fries and coleslaw. Wrightsville Beach. On a warm day, my wife Jill and I treat ourselves to lunch on the deck of the Dockside Restaurant, an institution in Wrightsville Beach since 1984. It's an informal place of outdoor tables shaded by umbrellas, an indoor canvas-roofed pavilion, an air-conditioned dining room, and a bar located right on the ICW. Just a few hundred yards south of the drawbridge that carries tourists and residents to Wrightsville Beach. We watch two dolphins swimming in with the tide from Mott's Channel, the curving cut that connects with Banks Channel, a favorite anchorage for sailboats plying the ICW north in the summer and south in the winter and fall. Which intersects the ICW right in front of the dockside. In the sun-dappled water rippled by a southeasterly breeze, the dolphin arc and dive back and forth as if aware that they're putting on a show. This picture is taken at dusk. It says accessible by land and water. Dockside Restaurant has been a favorite of beachgoers and boaters for some 30 years. It's an interesting picture because the sky is, yes, getting a little dark blue and there's a few little clouds there. The street light is on out in the street, but everything in the restaurant is lit up from the inside and the exposure is such that it really pops on this picture here with a bright yellowish glow of all the lights inside and everything lit up and a nice reflection in the rippled water by a couple of boats where somebody's getting off probably to go have dinner. And, of course, everybody knows Wilmington. Upriver from Snow's Cut lies Wilmington, once a busy cotton port and now home to UNC Wilmington, which offers a world-class marine science program. Today, the Cotton Exchange is just one of a phalanx of historic buildings renovated into shops and restaurants. The Riverwalk stretches nearly the length of downtown, anchored on the northeast branch by several new marinas and the Live Oak Bank Pavilion, an outdoor concert venue. The south end culminates at Chandler's Wharf and more riverfront dining. The USS North Carolina, permanently moored across the river on Eagles Island and served by water taxi, reminds visitors that this is an officially designated World War II city for its role in building a fleet of Liberty ships, billeting garrisons of soldiers, sailors, and coast guards, and providing three German prisoner of war camps. On the left, a drawbridge crosses the ICW and connecting Wrightsville Beach to the mainland and the historic port city of Wilmington. There's a little powerboat going under the drawbridge. Doesn't have to be open for them. And on the right-hand side, there is no caption. That's just the text that we talked about earlier is pointing there. There's three young women crossing a little bridge over a short piece of water, just about ready to come along the long waterfront in Wilmington and visit some of the shops. And finally, Snow's Cut. I'm steering my Beneteau sloop through the Snow's Cut, a channel dredged through the hollower that connects the Cape Fear River to the Intracoastal Waterway. The engine won't start, so we're under sail alone. The turn into Snow's Cut is tricky, a shallow, narrow passage, delineated by a series of red and green day marks on pilings. The cut was designed to be just 90 feet wide, though. These days, erosion has scoured it to almost 400. The tide rushes into Snow's Cut from the ocean side, so while we had the tide with us coming upriver, now it's dead against us. This is exactly what worried Major William Snow of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, charged with digging the cut in 1929. He and others feared that the out-of-sync tidal flows would render the cut too treacherous, so the Corps budgeted $500,000 to construct a tidal lock on the river and to ensure safe passage. But when the cut opened in 1930, to everyone's surprise, the lock wasn't needed. Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's Reading of Our State magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.